child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandmother's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of life, and builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith, makers of peace, wisdom of the ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We're mothers of courage and fathers of time. We're daughters of dust and sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy and brothers of love. We're lovers of life and builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We're makers of peace and wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are one.
Good morning. This is the Peace and Justice Program. My name is Chris, and I wish you a happy new year. That was Sweet Honey in the Rock, and can't get my first guest on the line, so starting the new year off here on the radio with a bang. But the reason I wanted to play that song was because of all the negativity in the world and the divisiveness and all the intensity and the sheer gloominess of things. And I wanted to remind us that we are descendants of stardust, and our ancestors, they lived in through difficult times, and we have carried their line forward. There is so much hope and beauty in this planet and inside of each and every one of us, and I hope that we will all be bearers of the future in a way that's positive. I wanted to get my guest on the line, but that didn't happen. So I have another thing for you that I think I was going to save to the end of the show. And this is Patti Smith. It was her 75th birthday. She had something I heard on another show called Notes to the Future, and I thought it would be really nice to bring it to you. So while I attempt to get Danny Scherzen on the phone, please enjoy Patti Smith.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear the sound of your own steps, the sound of your hereafter. Memory awaits and turns to greet you, draping its banner across your wrists. Wake up, arms, delicate feet, for as one to march the streets, each alone, each part of another, Your steps shall ring, shall raise the cloud, and they that will hear, will hear, will hear. Voice of the one and the one and the one, as it has never been uttered before. For something greater yet to come than the hour of the prophets in their great cities. For the people of Nineveh fell to their knees, heeding the cry of Jonah, united, covering themselves in sackcloth and ashes, and called to their God. And all their hearts were as one heart, and all their voices were as one voice. God heard them, and his mind was moved. Yet something greater will come to pass. And who will call? And what will they call? Will they call to God, the air, the fowl? It will not matter if the call is true. They shall call, and this is known. One voice, and each another shall enter the dead, the living flower, enter forms that we know not, to be felt by sea, by air, by earth, and shall be an elemental pledge. This is our birthright. This is our charge, and we have given over to others, and they have not done well. And the forests mourn, the leaves fall, swaddling babes watch and wonder as the fathers of our spirit nations dance in the street in celebration, as the mountains turn pale from their nuclear hand, and they have not done well. Now, my children, you must overturn the tables, deliver the future from material rule. For only one rule should be considered, the 11th commandment, to love one another. And this is our covenant across your wrist. This offering is yours to adorn, adore, to bury, to burn, upon a mound, to hail, to set away. It is merely a cloth, merely our colors, invested with the blood of a people, all their hopes and dreams. Our flag, it has its excellence, yet it is nothing. It shall not be a tyranny above us, nor should God, nor love, nor nature. Yet we hold as our pleasure this tender honor that we acknowledge the individual and the common ground formed. And if our cloth be raised and lowered half-mast, what does it tell us? That an individual has passed, is saluted and mourned by his countrymen. This ritual extends to us all, for we are all the individual. No unknown, no insignificant one, nor insignificant labor, nor insignificant act of charity. Each has a story to be told and retold, which shall be a glowing thread in the fabric of man, and the children shall march.
All right. That's Patti Smith on the occasion of her 75th birthday, and I'll try to play the rest of that at the end of the show, but I didn't want to cut into the time of my first guest. And he is Danny Scherzen. He's a retired U.S. Army officer, the director of the Eisenhower Media Network, a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, contributing editor at antiwar.com, and co-hosts the podcast Forest on a Hill. His work has appeared in the New York Times, LA Times, Nation, Hill, Salon, the American Conservative, Mother Jones, among other publications. He served combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and taught history at West Point. He's the author of three books, Ghostwriters of Baghdad, Soldiers, Civilians, and the Myth of the Surge, Patriotic Descent, America in the Age of the Endless War, and most recently, A True History of the United States. You can follow him at Skeptical Vet. At Skeptical Vet. So, Danny, hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't get you right at 11:30. I know you're in the Midwest, so the signal takes a while to get there.
Yeah, one of these years I'm going to, maybe it'll be this year, that I'll totally figure out the time zone, which is a bizarre thing in a certain sense, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I always have to look stuff up. Last year you were on with me on the Peace and Justice program after Biden was inaugurated, after we'd gotten through January 6th. And I just wanted to get any comments you might have had after a year of reflection, after this year that we have experienced together, about January 6th of last year, and your thoughts about, especially as a veteran, any concerns you have about using former or current military to further chaos and disenfranchisement, you know, by authoritarian forces, just the whole picture of it. What are your thoughts now, a year later?
You know, January 6th, it's strange, isn't it, that this will become an anniversary that we remember.
Yeah.
That January 6th is going to take on a certain resonance. I mean, the early part of the new year, there haven't really been a lot of anniversaries that we hold on to after the first, you know, until the next set of holidays comes around. But this is resonant. The military component of it is definitely a factor. It's something that got a lot of attention, but I think that what it really speaks to, beyond the per capita overrepresentation of veterans and even some active duty folks in the Capitol riot, I think it speaks to a militarization, a paramilitarization of society, of American life. And to a certain extent, this is expected. Empires come home. 20 years of war, even if it doesn't touch the vast majority of Americans in a visceral sense in terms of serving or being dependents of a military member in a military family, militarization will come home. There will be effects from 20 years of endless and global war. There will be. And I think it speaks to that. I mean, I think one of the things that we learned on January 6th is that the trust in the democratic process, in the peaceful resolution of issues via voting or any other democratic means, has lost a degree of trust among a significant portion of Americans. And now we're in a place where picking up a gun or, physically using your fist or your body weight has taken on a whole new value and resonance. I mean, the instinct, the reflex in American society has turned towards violence. And while I can't prove, and I don't believe anyone can, the direct connection to American militarized policy abroad and at home in our police and such retreat neighborhoods like occupied territory, I think that there is some sort of cultural and emotional connection. And I think that it behooves us be honest about that, and if we're not, I think we'll rue that day. I think we'll regret it.
So I'm speaking with Danny Scherzin. He is a retired U.S. Army officer and a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. And you're listening to KZFR Community Radio. I may not have said that at the beginning. Got a rocky start. Danny Scherzin, I recognize what you're saying, and I'm definitely concerned about it. Been watching different things about it, but I think that while we continue to have this war economy, we'll never be able to change anything because we can't make things better for the civilians, and so it's just a vicious cycle. And in your article in the Newsweek in November, "Pinching Pennies for People but Endless Cash for War," you said the U.S. must be the only country in the world where even when some wars end, like Afghanistan, government officials still elect to spend more money on the military, less war, more war spending, a uniquely perplexing American formula as income disparity and homelessness increases. I don't see how we can get out of this dissatisfaction and division if we cannot put our money towards civilian uses. So can you talk about that defense authorization bill? And I know you were writing quite a bit in November about that.
Well, absolutely. Look, a society, a nation, has to make choices. And prioritization is an important thing. It says something about a people, about a nation, about a political culture, about a political system. Where do we put our money? And in some ways, I'm beating an old drum, but it's gone so far off the rails that I think it needs to be spoken about, particularly this year. how a society spends its money, which is the money of its people. I mean, this is tax income, right? This is the, you know, the blood, sweat, tears, so to speak, of the folks who are in this country. When we spend, what, $768 billion on the basic defense budget, but when you include the nuclear programs in the Department of Energy, Homeland Security, certain departments of Veterans Affairs, benefits that go to the disabled veterans, as well as a wildly paramilitarized set of intelligence agencies, that we have about 20 in this country, separate ones, it's about $1.3 trillion. I don't like to call it an NDAA. You know, I think one of the problems with acronyms is that they're lifeless. Mm-hmm. National Defense Authorization Act, or they'll say the defense bill. But really, it's a national security budget of $1.3 trillion annually. That it's a national security budget that doesn't secure us. It doesn't achieve what it says it's for. We're not safer because we spend all this money on, quote, unquote, defense. We're actually less safe. I mean, our wars have been counterproductive. Eisenhower, a Republican president who probably today would be considered like a socialist because there was 90% top tax rate when he was president, he said that every gun that is made, every bomb that is built, is in a sense a theft from those who hunger and can't eat, from those who are cold and can't be sheltered. I mean, he said that in a speech in 1953. He went to West Point. He won Second World War. I mean, this was not a dove, right? This wasn't, well, in some ways he was, but this wasn't some peace stick, right, in the classic sense that it's made out to be. This is theft. This is theft from the people. It lines the pockets of what used to be called in the 1930s by Republican senators like Gerald Nye on the floor of the Senate, the merchants of debt. I mean, nation building does not work in Afghanistan or in Iraq, we found out, but nation building is working wonderfully in the Northern Virginia suburbs where the CEOs and the upper management of these war industry defense corporations are literally nation building an extension on their McMansion. I mean, this benefits a very small number of people, and that spending reflects who we are as a people, and the fact that it doesn't get that much controversy, the fact that it doesn't get people in the street, is, I think, one, a reflection of the fact that it's wonkish and it's hard to understand, and the numbers are just too big to fathom, and two, we've associated military spending with Americanism, with patriotism. And by doing that, we've created, and this was done purposefully by the political right, and then it's taken hold in the centrist left. This was on purpose.
Right.
And what it does is if you question the spending, then you're not really American. You're suspicious. You're not really a patriot. And that is a very dangerous formula, and it, I think you're right, contributes to this militarization of society, and it cannot be divided from things like January 6th and things from like militarized policing in our cities.
Right. Yeah, and you know, under right now we have some what they would say was Democratic control. Can't really tell that, but we know that Biden inherited global war, burgeoning new Cold War spanning four continents and a military mired in active operations in dozens of countries, combat in some 14 of them, bombing in at least seven. That's what you said last year at about this time. So, you know, perhaps the understanding is that we have to continue on all these fronts, that we have to be the world's policeman, that we have to be this superpower, you know, perhaps that's what it's about. But right now, when we see the hospitals overflowing and our inability to care for people during COVID, and we see that voting rights are being systematically undermined by gerrymandering and redistricting, and you know, we can't pass a voter right law, you know, it seems like the country is just going to go in the wrong direction under Biden. And I was wondering about your take on this a year out in his presidency, what you think
What do you think our chances are of being able to articulate this to the people of the United States about the risks that we face if we don't address climate change, if we don't address nuclear weapons, if we don't address, you know, inequality?
I think this is an enormously important point. Joe Biden was president, and if you listen to certain elements within the mainstream left or the mainstream Democratic Party, you were told that once Trump was gone, all would be well. All would be well, right? That was it. This was the big problem, was Trump is a monster. Trump is sort of obscene. And all of that was true on a number of levels. But the idea that the problem doesn't run deeper is a canard. It's dangerous thinking. When we talk about the fact that Biden is president and we're still throwing more money at militarized solutions to non-military problems. So there are three things that are a genuine national security threat. There are two of them could end the species. And the three things are, first, of course, pandemic, right, which I'm going to talk about here in a second, and how our spending doesn't actually reflect that problem, doesn't address that. Nuclear miscalculation could end the species, so could climate catastrophe, which we're on the brink of. Nothing in the $1.3 trillion that we spend annually, which, by the way, is about seven times more than the Build Back Better spending that we quibbled over, mm-hmm. because that's over 10 years. Nothing in that is going to help us with those problems. The reality is that the only hope for the human species, really for all the other species too, by the way, that we're going to take down with us potentially, that requires cooperation and the ability to live and let live with other powers. So this idea of a national security budget of $1.3 trillion that doesn't secure us and that actually heightens a, quote, new Cold War with Russia and China, which can't be won and shouldn't be fought because we're talking nuclear weapons, we're talking about nuclear powers. Tanks and aircraft carriers are useless against those three problems. And this was put on rather stark display when the USS Theodore Roosevelt, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier and an entire group of ships that come with it, was shut down by COVID. I mean, it leveled it. It made it combat ineffective through the spread of disease, through the spread of pandemic. And it just shows you that those billion-dollar weapon systems can be laid prostrate at the feet of the real problems before us. And so we're throwing good money at bad instead of investing in our Centers for Disease Control, et cetera, as well as just social spending to make life better for average people, which is the real strength of a nation, its economic well-being.
Right.
That's where the strength comes from. That's what lets you build tanks. That's what lets you, right, as if that's even a positive in the first place, but that's where the real strength of the source of national power is. And unfortunately, what we're finding is that even with the Democratic president who is supposedly going to save us from the ills of Trump, we're playing the exact same game. The playbook, the script is the same, and it's a failed one.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick is not coaching the American team, and I wish he was.
Right.
It is a buffoonish level of incompetence that borders on the absurd. And I know how negative and pessimistic that sounds, but this is a time for hard truths, and if we don't say them, we're doing a disservice to everyone.
Yeah, and I agree with you, of course. Danny Scherzin, we have run out of time because we got a late start, but I want to give you 1 minute. This is ridiculous to give you 1 minute about this new two-theater 21st century version of the Cold War with Russia and China. What would you tell a person who is prone to activism?
I would say that we need to treat this saber-rattling in this risky behavior that our government is undertaking, and it's doing it quietly, we need to treat it with the same level of urgency as if we were in the Vietnam War and there was a draft, and get in those streets. We need to demand a change, because in many ways, this is riskier than the wars that I fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a generation before me fought in the absurdist war in Vietnam. This level of heightened tension and investment in what they call usable nuclear weapons and crazy stuff like that, and this notion that the real problem is Russia and China, and that we're going to replay the Cold War script, which the Cold War almost ended the species last time around. It is absurd, it is dangerous, and we need to treat it with the same level of urgency as if there was, you know, the Vietnam War and we had to get in the streets. And I know that sounds simplistic, but we have to take that seriously.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want to thank you for your time and for your service. I don't know if I should say that to you. I honor you as a human being and everything you have lived and seen and done. And I wish you a well this new year. And thank you for being our guest today on the Peace and Justice Program.
Thank you. And thank you for talking about these issues. It's my pleasure always.
All right. Bye, Danny. Folks, this is Chris. The show is Peace and Justice. I'd like to thank our underwriters here. I have some blank screens I'm dealing with here at the station, so it's another interesting day with with the least tech person in the world at the controls. But we're getting through it. We're on the air. We're live, and I'm grateful. So Peace and Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Patrick Riley, a real estate professional with the Hightower Group specializing in properties in Chico and Butte Meadows. Patrick is dedicated to helping buyers and sellers achieve their real estate goals with compassionate, quality service. Patrick can be reached at 588-6593 and on Facebook. And by Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. I would like to also thank our underwriters for this next part of the Peace and Justice program. I'd like to thank Paradise Community Guilds, fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guilds invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help carry out that intent. To get involved, visit ParadiseGuilds.org, also on Facebook, and at 762-1490. And by the Bankruptcy Law Offices of Michael O. Hayes, a proud sponsor of Community Radio. For more than 40 years, Michael O. Hayes has provided consultations for Chapter 7 and Chapter 13 bankruptcies. You can reach Michael O. Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, at 892-8916 and at mhayeslaw.com. So, folks, it is almost the top of the hour. We're shy a minute or two. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. My name is Chris. The show is called Peace and Justice. I alternate with Robert Jones, who is here on the third Friday. We try to be with you every Friday from 11:30 to 1. We took a little break over the holidays, though. It was pretty delicious, but it's good to be back with you. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. So we started off the show with Sweet Honey and the Rock, and we played a little Patti Smith, which I hope to get back to if I can get back online. But this song is from Geoff Bartley. The CD is called Mercy for the Dispossessed. And we have a new CD player, so let's see how this goes. Okay, here you go.
Prayer for the lost, may they finally be found. A prayer for the withered, to find peace in the ground. A prayer for the evil, may they live to find good, for the bad ones to be understood. A prayer for the Christians to meet Christ face to face. A prayer for the Muslims, may they find Allah's grace. A prayer for the Hindus to escape the dark wheel. For the Buddhists, may they lightly feel. A prayer for your eyes, may they always see clear. A prayer for your children, may they always be near. A prayer for your soul, may it find its own sight. May your children's soul show you your light. A prayer for reprieve as the shadows climb down. A prayer for release as the chill wraps around. When the owl calls, when the heart falls, when the rivers freeze hard, in the darkness we all crawl toward. A prayer for the wild ones who jump on our beds. A prayer for their dreams in our hearts and our heads. In the gray before waking, in the time before light, the ones who can set our world right. A prayer for us all.
Okay, lots of prayers going out there, and I appreciate that. And this is Chris. The show is called Peace and Justice, and I have on the line with me a very impressive woman, and I want to tell you about her and then talk to her a bit. Let's get this going here. This is Cynthia Papermaster. She lives on Ohlone land in Berkeley with her service dog and activist colleague Lucky, and is coordinator of the San Francisco Bay Area wide Golden Gate chapter of Code Pink Women for Peace. She's a retired law librarian with a BA in political science and a master's in library science from UC Berkeley. She's also director of the Berkeley chapter of No More Guantanamos, active in Extinction Rebellion, on the board of the Micklejohn Civil Liberties Institute, on the steering committee of the Berkeley Progressive Alliance. She facilitates the anti-nuclear group BARC, Barkers Agitating for Reactor Closures, a group of dogs working to close PG&E's Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, yay dogs, and is a member of the Berkeley Mayor's Task Force on Socially Responsible Banking. Cynthia organizes Code Pink actions and events, especially in alliance with social and environmental justice groups, and works on Code Pink's Cut the Pentagon and Divest from the War Economy campaigns. Welcome, Cynthia, to Peace and Justice Program. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much, Chris, for having me, and thank you for your work. You're an amazing activist.
Well, thank you. When I look at your Facebook page, which people can find as Bay Area Code Pink, I see it goes Code Pink Golden Gate, actually. I see all the work that you guys have been doing and all the amazing activists you've worked with, and I'm just really envious. It's great, all those connections. But you were right. We do have a rich activist community here. We're just, some of us are not working on some of the things that you're working on, but it is an important activist community here. I'd like you to reflect back on 2021 first, and then we'll talk more about 2022, but people need to know, about the incredible work that is going on behind the scenes by activists, especially in the Bay Area.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. And as I look back over 2021, I was impressed myself with how much we undertook. So I'm just going to mention a few things that really stand out for me in terms of the amount of organizing it took and the wonderful response that we got in our peace and justice community here in the Bay Area. We've been holding monthly people's assemblies at Nancy Pelosi's, Speaker Nancy Pelosi's house in San Francisco. She lives up on Broadway in Pacific Heights. And these monthly assemblies are a way for her constituents to give voice to their concerns. Because I don't know if people know this or not, there are a couple things I want to mention. She doesn't hold town meetings with her constituents. She's not really accessible. We've tried, for example, to deliver letters to her about freeing Assange, Julian Assange, or freeing Daniel Hale, the drone. He doesn't want to be called a whistleblower, but the person who talked about our drone strikes killing civilians. And we can't even get a letter to her. So she's just really inaccessible. So these people's assemblies allow people to come, and we write a giant letter to her, which we leave there. And it's just a way for people to be able to talk to her. And we have a free vegan dinner, and we have an extinction dance party. All animals are welcome to come, to come and dance, including humans, which are going extinct. So it's just a wonderful gathering. We've been doing it monthly. We're going to do it quarterly in 2022. We held, with other groups, we held a large event in June to raise money for and raise awareness around Julian Assange being imprisoned. I don't know if your listeners know very much about him, but he's a publisher and editor who's being held in Belmarsh Prison in England.
Yeah, we have done shows about him.
Good. Yeah, he's really innocent. As far as we can tell, he hasn't committed any crimes in the United States. Finally won in the last hearing the permission to extradite him to the United States, but that's being appealed. But without having been convicted of anything, he's been held for a couple of years now in a high security, horrible, horrible prison in England. It's just a travesty. Anyway, we raised a lot of money for him, and we raised awareness, and that was with Alice Walker. It was wonderful meeting her. In August, we had a Code Pink webinar, a national Code Pink webinar, on militarism and climate, which was very well attended. Those two things really go hand in hand. The military is creating climate catastrophe, and instead of spending money on addressing the climate emergency, we're spending it on the military, as your previous guest so succinctly pointed out.
Right.
Yeah. And then I'm just going to mention one more thing. Two more. We had an International Day of Peace in September 21 with a teach-in at UC Berkeley and a tea party later on the afternoon at Pelosi's house. And we performed a skit called More War, Please. That was performed by the Billionaires for War, who want more war and who are basically getting their way. That was hilarious. We like to have fun. And then finally, I'm going to mention that we went down to Boeing and Lockheed Martin facilities in Palo Alto last month. And we want to highlight that these war profiteers, I loved how Denny called them merchants of death. So I'm going to start calling them merchants of death because that's exactly what they are. So we're really focusing on these merchants of death and how they have locked up our federal budget and our economy into a war economy. So those are just some highlights from last year.
Yeah, and I think that Lockheed Martin work that you're doing is really important. People really need to be aware of where their tax dollars are going and the fact that there's nothing good coming out of Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. I will mention, too, about Lockheed, and people may or may not know this, they made 1,000% profit, 1,000% profit, over the 20-year war in Afghanistan. That's a lot of profit. They really won that war, but we did not win it. But they made a killing on killing there with the Afghan war. It's just heartbreaking. It's just a tragedy.
Yeah. When you look at, I didn't get a chance to ask Danny Scherzin about that. I know that it's really difficult for him as a veteran of the Afghanistan war to see what's happened to the Afghanistan people, and now they've just dropped out of the news. And
Are you organizing anything with Afghan refugees? I know they are in Sacramento.
Yes, I've dipped my toe in it, but I need to really jump in, and I would. I'm looking forward to getting more connected with groups in this area who are helping them, because that's something we can do. We did hold a bake sale for Afghan women at Pelosi's house. And, I mean, the irony there is pretty stark. I just want to say, if I could, just a little detour about Pelosi for a moment.
Please, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, she's the Speaker of the House. We have a Democratic majority in the House and the Senate, and we have a Democrat in the White House. So you would think that if the Democrats wanted to, well, if she really wanted to represent San Francisco values, or even the values of the United States, where poll after poll show that people want us to get out of these wars, and they want us to cut military spending. And that's a, I don't know, I think it's around 48 to 50-something percent of people say that they want to cut military spending. And yet, she always says yes to the Pentagon budget, and they give the Pentagon more than they even ask for.
Right.
I mean, I'm scratching my head and I'm going, Pelosi, why aren't you listening to your constituents, and why aren't you not listening to the Democratic Party itself? But, you know, just do, you know, actually, she could say no to that higher budget from the Pentagon. So why isn't she saying no? Why isn't Biden saying no? This is rhetorical. Yep, I wonder. I really do.
Right. So, well, yeah. Hopefully she will be out as Speaker and we won't have a Republican in there. We'll have a new Democrat with different ideas.
Exactly. Yeah, Barbara Lee, for example.
Yeah, that would be great, Barbara Lee.
She's my representative, and she wants to cut the Pentagon budget by 50%.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be, Barbara Lee has my vote. You know, I wanted to ask you about things that are coming up in the new year. I'm speaking to Cynthia Papermaster. She is with Golden Gate Code Pink. And I know that January 11th marks the 20th year that the prison at Guantanamo has been open, and that Witness Against Torture is planning a presence at the in Washington, D.C., and there will be vigils around the country. Are you Bay Area people doing anything about it?
Yes. In solidarity with the actions going on in Washington, D.C., which Code Pink is taking part in on January 11th, we will have something here. We haven't quite figured it out yet, but I want to tell your listeners, if they're interested in joining us in any of our actions, we always post them on indiebay.org. That's indiebay.org, where there is a calendar of actions happening all around the San Francisco Bay Area. So today, I'll put up our action on IndieBay. I haven't yet. I've had a little cold, or not COVID.
Well, I'm glad it's not COVID. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you for that question. Yeah, Guantanamo is still open. There's, I think, 39 prisoners left there. At the highest point, there were over 600, I believe. Most of them have been released. And of the 39 left there, I'm not sure how many of them have been cleared for release, but one of the big problems with the Guantanamo situation was a lot of the prisoners there have been cleared for release, meaning that our own government, under both Republican and Democrat presidents, have looked at their cases, thoroughly looked at their cases, and cannot find anything to charge a lot of the men with. So there's no reason for them to still be held. It's a shameful situation.
Yeah. You know, there's so much to be doing. Tell us a little more about your calendar for early 2022. What's up with, yeah. Because I think sometimes it's positive to hear what other people are doing, because it gives people ideas of what we could be doing here.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. People everywhere can look at the merchants of death in their midst.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Cynthia, merchants of death and what?
In their midst.
Oh, in their midst. Okay.
They're right in their midst.
Yeah.
Right down the street. Well, as you probably know, the big five merchants of death, Lockheed, Boeing, Raytheon, Grumman, Northrop Grumman, and General Dynamics have facilities all over the country. They're really in every state in the union, and they are big employers. We understand that, and that is part of the reason why they have a lock on our federal budget, is that members of Congress do not want to, challenge them at all. They do a lot of lobbying. They do a lot of campaign contributions to members of Congress, and they do employ a lot of people. It's a huge jobs program, as the military is as well. So what we're saying, though, is that all of the money that we spend on Lockheed and Boeing and Raytheon, et cetera, should be going to things like housing, climate, justice, health care, education. How about, affordable housing would be a really good example right there. We don't have enough.
Right.
And we can't afford any of these really good, positive social goods because we're spending most of our money on the military. So what we'd like people to do all over the country is to look at the merchants of death that are in their own midst and take some action to highlight that they're there and to ask them to change their business model. Now, that might sound really crazy to people. That might sound, like pie in the sky. You can't ask Lockheed to cut their profits, that 1,000% profit on the Afghan war. You can't ask them to cut their profits, can you? I mean, the shareholders won't like that. But our argument is this. You are investing, you're spending all your money on making weapons and our forever wars, which are killing the planet. So it's really a very short-sighted business model. In the long run, when you kill the planet, there won't be any customers left for your product at all. So if you would just change your business model and start using your brilliant engineers to figure out how to fight climate emergency, figure out how to clean up our water and give us our clean energy and inexpensive housing so everyone can have a place to live. I mean, wouldn't it be great if these big five merchants of death would turn their attention to our actual community needs? I mean, that would be something.
Yeah, it certainly would.
Over
the holidays, my daughter was home and we watched all of The Matrix and we watched a film called Don't Look Up. And there are a lot of things to be discouraged about. It seems like if people aren't paying attention, then there's no way that we can, that we can get, this meteor to stop hitting the earth. You know, we have to first pay attention and we have to, work together and we have to leverage and we have to speak as one voice. And
absolutely.
I know you work in coalition with a lot of different groups. And could you discuss a little bit about how you work together so well with so many different disparate groups in the Bay Area?
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I've watched the film a couple times, and it's really spreading around. It's on everybody's lips. we in Code Pink have always reached out to allies across many issues to work together. And while we are a women-led organization and we want to appeal to women to take their power, very much so, we connect with the climate justice groups. We collect with Black Lives Matter, the Yemeni and Afghani communities. All issues are connected. I just want to say that, and that's how we make this work, is that we point that out. If you have an issue around the climate, militarism is playing a huge role there. So let's look at that, and we can get people who are in the peace movement to work on climate activism as well, and we would like it to go the other direction too. We very much invite all groups to think about the connections, and we are seriously... all of these issues are connected, aren't they? Indigenous groups are especially groups that we want to follow leadership of. because there's the wisdom and the connection with the earth and the reverence for life and the planet and our mother that informs our work as peace activists. That is why, I want to say this too, that I think it's why we're so dedicated to working for peace, is that we feel the pain of children around the world who are the victims of our Pentagon and our military spending and of our climate destruction as a result. All the people who are suffering around the world, we're all connected with them. We're all connected with them. We're all connected with the pain of our Mother Earth. And we need to right that. And it's women, Chris, I really believe it's women who are going to do this, who are going to make this difference. Women, stand up. Women to the front. You know, I can't say it enough. We have power. We have tremendous power.
Right.
So let's take our power. Let's do that in 2022. I'm going to ask people, too, to look in the middle of April, the week before tax day, there are going to be actions all over the country to focus on the war industry in our midst. There are at least 12 locations around the United States. We're starting to plan this now, and it's going to lead up to a big action, I think, around tax day or right before or after. So those are some of our plans. We're just going to keep working on cutting the Pentagon. We're going to keep working on reducing militarism's harm to our mother.
All right. And I hope war tax resistance, too, figures in, although, you know, that's another subject. Cynthia Papermaster, you are part of a new group, too, that's called War Industry Resistance Network. Can you tell us anything about that? I had never heard of that before.
Well, it's brand new, just a few months old. Code Pink, Veterans for Peace, Massachusetts Peace Action, the Bruce Gagnon's group that's against weaponizing space. I don't necessarily know the names of all the different groups that are in this network, but we are meeting on a regular basis to plan this week in April with webinars and actions around the country. We are really focusing in on those big five merchants of death that I mentioned earlier. I'm going to say their names again: Boeing, Lockheed, Raytheon, Grumman, and General Dynamics.
Yeah.
They actually siphon over half of our Pentagon budget into their coffers, into their pockets. Again, it's a big jobs program, but it's something we need to actually have them transition. So we're also looking at that as a very important piece. Mm. Our labor force needs alternatives to working for these big merchants of death. And I know that they feel in their hearts that they don't really necessarily like the work they're doing, but what option is there for them? So right. That has to be a focus as well.
You know, in the minutes, we have 2 or 3 minutes left, and I wanted to see if you could tell people about how to get involved in Code Pink, because I know during COVID, a lot of people are not going to come out into the streets or, you know, be able to engage, but they can do so much online. Code Pink has always got campaigns online and webinars and all that kind of stuff. So how can people plug in?
They should go to, if they have internet, they should go to codepink.org, www.codepink.org, and all the campaigns are shown there. We usually have about 20 different campaigns going on at once. We have all of our weekly webinars up there. You'll see actions happening almost every day. On Tuesday at 5 Pacific, every other Tuesday, we have a Capitol Calling Party. What is that? We have guests like members of Congress and authors and so forth come on and talk to us about an issue. And then we turn that into action. And right there on the phone at the end of our call, we make calls to Congress or we email or we tweet at them and tell them to take action on certain issues. And those can be very powerful ways to act. So I recommend people go to codepink.org. And look at all the stuff we're doing. And you don't have to be a woman. We absolutely welcome men to work with Code Pink, but we are women-led. Just keep that in mind. And you don't have to wear pink, although pink looks good on everybody.
I posted a picture of you with pink hair, so people perhaps have
that's
seen
not
you.
My real, that's not my real hair. That's,
I know. I know. Cynthia Papermaster.
Today, in anticipation of this interview, I put on a code pink shirt and a code pink sweatshirt. I don't know why, because you can't really see me, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's what another thing I love about Code Pink is everybody just as outrageous as they feel like being. It's a very fun group.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's true. So last words, and then I'll let you go.
Okay, especially for women. Come on, rise up. Seriously, rise up. We have power, and we like to have fun. We love each other. You're looking for more love in your life, more fun and feeling that you can really make a difference, get with Code Pink, codepink.org. Thank you.
right. And, yeah, I love the fact that, you know, there's such community there and, you know, people take care of one another when they're sick and, you know, so much is going on there. And folks, I know these women from our anti-drone work at Beale Air Force Base and also at Creech Air Force Base, where these bonds have grown stronger over the years. So I want to thank you so much for all you're doing in the leadership and being part of the dog culture, dog lovers.
Oh, yeah, dogs rule.
Yeah, dogs rule.
They have a lot of gravitas, you know.
Yes. Right? Yeah, people love dogs more than they love people. So oftentimes that's a groundbreaker. And all the military likes to pet my dog when she comes out to Beale.
Same with Lucky. He's like, and the Capitol Police love him. They all love dogs. They do.
Yeah. Well, peace to you, and thank you so much for being with me today on the Peace and Justice
Program.
Thank
you, Chris.
Okay.
I'm going to tune in more often.
Yay. Okay.
All right. Well, take care and Happy New Year.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right, folks. I wanted to have one more guest, important local guest. Slide my papers this way and that way. Again, this is the Peace and Justice Show. My name is Chris. We're on every Friday from 11:30 to 1. We are followed by Playing Dead at 1 o'clock and then Sanjay with Devastation Sounds after that. So Friday really mellows out after this. So please stay tuned to really chill as you wish on this gloomy day. And I wanted to let you know about another very important January event, which is the celebration every year that we have of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This year is going to be virtual again, as it was last year. It's going to be Sunday, January 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. And the title this year is Restoring Economic Opportunity in Our Community. It will be streamed as I said, at 2 o'clock, and it's online at BCACTV, Channel 11, or on the Beloved Community Chico Facebook page, or the BCACTV's YouTube channel. The theme, Restoring Economic Opportunity in Our Community, came out of the inequalities reflected in the lives of people of color, amplified by the pandemic and political atmosphere of 2021. It is dedicated to the Reverend Hosea Williams, principal civil rights leader and protest organizer with Dr. King. Video director again is Joshua Edwards. He was responsible for this last year, and he will be helped by film students Marantha and Ife Saint. The virtual program begins with Michu Damaidu land acknowledgement, which I did not do today, and I have in my stack of things to do. Let me say that now. We are located on Muchupta territory and acknowledge we are the guests of the Muchupta Maidu, who are the rightful claimants of this land as the past, present, and future stewards of their home. And so this virtual event for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s memorial celebration will start with an acknowledgement, and then there'll be music, there'll be drums, there'll be Haitian dance, there'll be amazing speakers, Larry Coleman and Dr. Lisa Johnson, about the economic lens of our history, And Allie Metters and I will be speaking about traditional ecological knowledge. Emma Culture's Anicia Johnson will be talking about the African diaspora culture. Hue Vision Productions, which is a collaborative local community members, will be doing a reality workshop collage, which centers on the facets of inequality. So a lot of fascinating things, and I hope that everyone can participate. Again, hosted by Martin Luther King Unity Group, and on Facebook, it's Beloved Community Chico. So that's next Sunday, 2 p.m., and we'll hear more about it on the show next week. So I'd like to get to our final guest of the Peace and Justice Program, and that would be Charles with Hewn. So let me put on a song. Again, this is Sweet Honey and the Rock, and this one is called Prayer.
Must I do unto others before they do unto me? Must I arm myself to protect myself from harm and injury? Oh, no, that is not the lesson that I learned on my mother's knee when she told me to do
do unto others, I think, is a good one. And again, this is the Peace and Justice Program. I have on the line with me the amazing Charles with Hewn. Charles is retired as a graphic designer, but went on to do the Peace Panel Project, which you may have seen at the farmer's market, but he's traveled all over the state with that. He has planted many, many trees in the city of Chico and stood up for our heritage trees. He's done anti-militarism recruitment, military recruitment at the high schools. He has been very active in chat with Simplicity Village. And most recently, he seems to be focusing on North State Shelter Team, which he founded, and his active involvement we're going to get into right now. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for being you and doing what you do. I wanted to first get your reflections or thoughts about this announcement that the Warren settlement was reached on Tuesday night between Chico's unhoused community and the city of Chico. And we don't have any details about this, but perhaps you could take our listeners back a little bit about what this is and why it's important, what we think may come out of it.
This is such a situation, Chris. Our a number of city councils, not just the most recent one, but even previous city councils, didn't even put homelessness on the agenda. In recent history, the city of Chico became recipient of a windfall, $20 million, called COVID recovery money. And our city manager laid out how to spend it all in a meeting. He had about 16 programs where he thought it would be good to put that money. And he mentioned homelessness in the very last idea. The word homelessness was there once to set aside a little money to address the homeless situation. And a city councilor who at that time was not even residing in Chico, was actually living in Red Bluff, objected to the word homeless in that report, made a motion that it be stricken from that report, and that motion was seconded and it was passed. And the city councilor's plan for the $20 million went forward without even mentioning what I observe as the worst humanitarian crisis to hit the streets and parks of Chico in my lifetime, I've been working here 20 years. Well, I've been working here, pardon me, I've been working here about 45 years in downtown Chico. Mm-hmm. And this is the worst I've ever seen. I've never seen the count of people dying outside as much as they is happening just in the last year or two. Just amazing. So
22 people.
The city of Chico came on. Mm-hmm. The city councilors came forward. Their idea was to just make the people move, harass the campers until they would leave the area. That was their response, as stated by a city councilor. And this went on for a while. I helped, you and I helped a probably 60-year-old homeless person move. We're trying to help him move because they're being swept out of a little place next to the freeway there where they had set up camps. And this guy, Terry, looked like he was going to die. We had to call 911. And he looked up at me and he said, you know, the city council is putting us in these life-threatening conditions. It's like they want to kill us. And ultimately, Legal Services in Northern California picked up on what was going on, filed a case, and the federal judge weighed in, and he said that, and by this time the city had put together a safe car park out by the airport that they called a shelter, and it was nothing but an asphalt parking lot, and to which the federal judge said it did not pass the straight face test.
No.
And he approved an injunction that made it illegal for Chico police and Chico officials to sweep or to ask homeless people to move from public spaces if there's not enough shelter beds. And so the city and Legal Services in Northern California have been negotiating for many months now, and we just heard the other day, a week ago, that apparently there's going to be a ruling in 2 weeks, so a week from now, theoretically. But I just talked to a lawyer a few minutes ago who's closely involved in the case, and he's not sure that it's going to come down quite that fast, but he's hopeful. And basically, the Legal Services of Northern California was able to got a judge, a federal judge, to agree that the city of Chico is acting unconstitutionally in criminalizing homelessness,
right,
so that people who are sleeping in public spaces were being harassed and moved, even though the city wouldn't set up a safe car park or a campground or tiny home village.
Right.
It's just amazing. Politico, the New York Times, and a number of other news sources had called out Chico as one of three places in California as the poster city of what not to do,
right,
because we got caught by the Constitution. So we're awaiting the federal judge to make a ruling based on the agreement that Legal Services and the city are coming to that should happen, hopefully, in the next few days.
So, Charles, with you, and I don't want to run out of time, I'd like to talk about some of the nitty-gritty about what you're doing and about this fence and the work that you need done, what you expect to happen, especially at Comanche Creek, in light of this coming settlement.
Right. We need help. The campers need help moving away from the fence right now. I was out there a few days ago with some people from DSA and Safe Space, and we moved a couple of campers away from the fence. The plan is that in the next few days, the city will come in and they'll want to put in a temporary fence, and they're going to need 30 feet from the northern fence. They want that all cleared out, and that's, of course, where it was a popular space for tents to be, and so there are a lot of campers that are having to move, and it's a huge job to pick up all your stuff in under these weather conditions, and so we'd really appreciate anybody who's listening who might have a little empathy in their heart to come by Comanche this weekend and just get to know a camper and ask if you can help. That, you know, you understand they've got to move 30 feet away from the fence. And so we brought a trailer and, you know, a few people and just pick stuff up and put in a trailer and pull it a few yards south and unload them.
So specifically, what
right now is moving all the campers 30 feet away from the fence that needs to happen.
Right. So when would people meet up with you? Because I think if somebody had never been out there, they would probably be pretty uncomfortable about doing that without working with other people. When will you be there?
Our time, we like to be at Comanche on Sundays starting at 1:20.
Okay.
I think it's real important that everybody listening participate in Chico Friends on the Street that is noon on Sunday, because I think it's a really important political statement in front of the city council chambers, 4th and Main, Sundays at noon. And then after that, we head over to Comanche, and our event starts at Comanche at 1:20, and we usually, you know, work there for an hour, hour and a half, trying to help the campers, handing out supplies, and this, now we're helping people move.
So my understanding is that once the fence is in, there'll be a large tent like the one at Depot Park put in at Comanche. There'll be more, finally, some more dumpsters and more porta-potties. What is your understanding about what may happen next in terms of the unhoused in Chico? What do you think will happen?
Right. It's speculation because, of course, the major players in the actual suit can't talk about it. And they're the authorities on the subject, and so it's all up in the air until the judge makes his ruling. But the conventional wisdom is that they'll make Comanche a sanctioned campground. You'll have to be, you know, a certain distance away from the fence, certain distance away from the water, and have proper fence and proper security, proper number of porta-potties, and other amenities until the BMX 5 acres next to the racetrack at Silver Dollar is set up, which conventional wisdom says could be a minimum of 2 months, probably longer, getting that area prepared for bringing in 177 pallet shelters, these little plastic houses. The county set aside $1.7 million, I believe they've spent already, wrote the check to the pallet company, and there's 177 of these little plastic, white plastic houses headed for Chico that will be set up in the on the BMX property, and then they claim that this will be room for 350 people, and they will have, now they've got a place for people to go, and so they expect the judge to lift the injunction. And when that happens, I think that's really going to be a reckoning moment for our community. Are we going to stand by and allow continued harassment of poor people if, for a myriad of reasons, there is a problem for them living in a tiny plastic box?
Right.
Yeah, I can imagine there's going to be a fair number of campers that would prefer to continue camping, and so I'm hoping that we can get, at that time, the city to move forward with a campground. We have property available north of town and south of town. There's no reason why we couldn't have a couple of campgrounds. Like, they have campgrounds in Nevada City. They have campgrounds in Red Bluff.
Mm-hmm.
Marysville has 14 Forward. There's any reason why we couldn't utilize some of our vacant property that's available for that purpose and give people more options. The issue is that people are different. We're not going to have one size fits all.
Right.
Just because you've got 177 little plastic houses doesn't mean everybody's going to want to stay there.
Right.
We need a variety of options for people, and camping, I think, is the least expensive, most effective way to shelter people. Just Livermore is starting this little, they've got their little Goodness Village going on, based on the Community First out of Austin, Texas. Eugene has an example of their 14 safe communities. Everybody ought to go to communitysupportedshelters.org and see what they're doing in Eugene. That's been described as the most successful non-congregate program in the country now, is these safe spot communities that Community Supported Shelters is doing in Eugene. There isn't any reason why we couldn't be doing that here, putting up micro shelters in church parking lots.
Right. You know, Charles Withune, you worked your heart out for Simplicity Village and, you know, on tiny homes, and now you've turned some of your attention toward mobile showers. Can you tell us the progress of that, what help you may need from our listeners in order to actualize that?
Well, it has been actualized. We were so frustrated that proposal after proposal to the city for campgrounds and tiny home villages and Deer Creek Village and Bike Village and Bike Town, all these proposals that we'd put so much effort into for addressing the homeless situation got turned down. We just picked up on Haven a Home, looked at what Kevin was doing. We're totally impressed. It's a wonderful thing to do. And so we couldn't afford a Haven a Home trailer, so we built our own, raised some money, and now we've got a two-stall shower trailer. One of the stalls is ADA compliant, and we're able to take it out and offer showers. We've given 118 showers out over the last 10 or 12 weeks. Right now we're reworking, upgrading the shower trailer. It's we're taking it out of service to be able to add an additional heater and another water pump. That we're working on. We hope to have that done in a week or two and then get it back online. But, yeah, please go to North State Shelter Team Facebook page and scroll down until you find the link that talks about our GoFundMe campaign. And you can donate there, or you can certainly just send a check to North State Shelter Team, P.O. Box 5652, Chico, California, 95927.
All right. Yeah, I think it's really impressive what you're doing, because people, it's so important that people feel clean, you know, and just it's important to their health, too. And one of the other big health issues I know you're working on is the warming tent, the unrealistic and arbitrary and life-threatening numbers. I guess I'll tell our listeners this. The city of Chico only heats this tent, puts it up if it's less than 32 degrees. Or, you know, they have these other criteria. It has to be raining 3/4 of an inch and be 45 degrees. And anyway, Charles Withune, tell us about that situation, what you're trying to do.
Yes, we've put together a letter motivated by doctors and nurses and the rest of our team. The current city criteria that's been in effect for years, as you say, they don't turn on the heat until the temperatures get below 32 degrees. What? Or temperatures of 40 degrees if wind speeds are 15 miles an hour or more. These criteria are so arbitrary to the point of being life-threatening. And so we're requesting the city councilors to direct staff amend the criteria for turning on the heat at the warming center seasonally. This criteria needs to be looked at seasonally. It hasn't been. This has been the same criteria for years. And all of a sudden, we've got a little bit colder than normal, a little bit rainier than normal, a little more wind than normal. Wow! You only have to get down to 50 degrees and get wet, and if you don't get warm, a little bit of wind, in 3 hours, hypothermia can set in. It can be life-threatening in 3 hours. Yeah. I'm shocked that our community doesn't respond more rapidly to these crises that are, you know, we've got people dying on the sidewalk. That never used to happen in Chico. And all of a sudden, we're finding this to be the new normal. I refuse to accept that. I think that we need to, at the very least, review the criteria for the warming center. We want the heat turned on if the temperature ever falls below 45 degrees, or even below 50 degrees if there's any amount of wind or any amount of rainfall. And we have a couple of doctors and a couple of nurses who have signed the letter along with about seven of our members from North State Shelter Team. We sent it to all the city councilors, and we're attempting to get it to Judge England, but we've been advised that this issue is separate from the case in front of the judge at this moment, and so he might not want to add this to his list of to-do list, but it's certainly something that's within the power of our city manager right now to act on today,
right.
Or our city councilors at the very next meeting could direct staff to amend the criteria for turning on the heat.
Charles Withune, I wanted to add something to what you've been talking about, one is which there is the safe space is operational again, going from church to church, a week here, a week there, and they desperately need volunteers. They're having about 45 guests a night, which is lower than it used to be, but they're trying to be COVID safe. They need meals, dinner meals made by volunteers, and they need volunteers for evening shifts as well as morning shifts and laundry shifts at the ends of each week. So you can go to safespacechico.org in order to participate in this incredibly important work. And also, that's another group that can use donations from you. So
right.
They were looking for blankets.
We want to help Safe Space. We've gotten our van going on and have been transporting people. This Safe Space is probably the leading group in our community for addressing this crisis, and I encourage all of our listeners to get a hold of, visit their website, their Facebook page, and volunteer for Safe Space. They need all the help they can get. That's true.
Now, I wanted you to have some time to just finish up with whatever you feel is most important for the listeners here on the Peace and Justice Program to know about or to give to or be involved in. Thank you, Charles. Please.
Thank you, Chris. Pastor Dan Brandt of Square One Villages in Eugene says that this homeless issue is a justice issue. How can we expect liberty and justice for all if such a large part of our community is denied the opportunity to function normally, to pursue happiness? If all you can do is try and stay alive, if your whole mindset, if all your mental energy is focused on survival, now you're going to be desperate.
Yeah.
This is a social justice issue. So it is a justice issue. It's an economic issue. It's actually less expensive for a community to provide shelter, to provide safe space, than it is to leave people in a cold. They're 70% more likely to be used in emergency services. And it only takes one or two trips to the emergency room, and you've spent as much money as it would be to have somebody for a year in a tiny home village.
Right. And you bring up a good point about just the quality of their lives is such that all they can do is survive. I mean, you know, trying to find a place to charge your phone or trying to get that next meal or, you know, trying to walk to an appointment. I mean, they spend all their time and they don't ever get to, you know, they don't ever get to actualize anything that they may have wished for themselves. And, you know, I see that as a huge waste of human capabilities. A lot of those people are extremely intelligent, good people.
Chris, that's one of my motivations. That's one of the things that gets me is I will come across a homeless person pushing all their belongings or some guy asleep in the park in the middle of the day, and I just think, what lost human potential?
Right.
If he just had, or she just had her basic needs taken care of, they could become a regular functioning member of our community and be contributing to solutions instead of being so desperate that, you know, they're in constant need of more help.
Right.
Satisfying people's basic needs, food and shelter and sanitation, saves us money. It's more ethical, it's more economical, it's more logical way to go. I'm hoping that our listeners can make their voices heard at city council meetings and at letters to the editor and by volunteering at Safe Space and volunteer for North State Shelter Team and go to our Facebook page and see the announcements and get involved.
Right.
We need, you know what needs involvement too, is the referendum.
That's right. I wanted to mention that.
Collecting signatures on this referendum, right. And I would say collecting signatures on the recall.
Right. Okay, so both of those.
We can get more volunteers to help with those efforts.
Right. And we only have this one more weekend on the referendum against gerrymandering he's talking about. And also there is a recall for our mayor, Coolidge, and also Morgan. And so that's District 1 or 5. So there will be people out at the Safeway on Nord for that, and at the farmers market and other places in Chico for the referendum. Charles, with you, and I have to let you go, but I appreciate you so much. Please protect your back and stay safe. Okay. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great rest of the day. I appreciate your time and appreciate everything you're doing. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, KZFR listeners, please stay tuned for Playing Dead. I'm glad he brought that up at the very end. That was important. And let's thank some underwriters first before I go. I'd like to thank Pearl Consulting, offering digital branding and marketing to attract and connect with your ideal client. From websites and logos to social media, owner Sarah Fontaine provides comprehensive branding solutions for your online presence to bring you the business you're looking for. Visit pearlconsulting.tech or call 530-588-7505 to get started. And by Digital Path, providing high-speed internet for your home or business. Digital Path offers flexible plans with expanded data and speeds up to 75 megabytes per second. Details about Digital Path service at 800-676-PATH, P-A-T-H. That's 800-676-7284 and at digitalpath.net. So everybody, please stay well. Keep those masks on. Keep your distance from others. There is incredible number of COVID cases in our community right now. You don't want to get sick. So our hospital is filling up, and we just must protect one another and keep those medical bills down, whatever you can do. I'm going to go ahead to the community calendar and then stay tuned for Playing Dead with Ray Lager. He'll be in the room as soon as I extricate myself. So peace to you all. Here we go with the community calendar.
Hey listeners, it's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar with me, Megan Hammer. Once beloved or extra musical instruments can find a new purpose as donations to benefit the symphonic, concert, and marching bands, as well as choir programs at Chico High School. The instrument drive culminates with a January 8, 2022 drop-off event at the Chico High Stadium parking lot, where volunteers will be on hand from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. that Saturday. Donors can contact organizers to make special arrangements for instrument pickup or delivery. New as well as gently used instruments in need of repair are welcome. Large instruments such as pianos cannot be accepted at this time due to size and expense. The instruments will be loaned to students who cannot afford to buy or rent them. Any donations to the boosters go directly toward enriching music education at the school. Anyone wishing to support music education at Chico High can also make a direct donation to the Music Boosters Fund via the North Valley Community Foundation, NVCF, at the following link, www.nvcf.org/funds/chico-high-music-boosters. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar.
And thanks for tuning in. My name's Ray. I'll be your host today on Playing Dead, Music of the Grateful Dead.